Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Tonight, our speaker is Vanessa Abel. Vanessa has been with us for a few years, and before that, she practiced in Britain, and she's on our board of directors. And tonight, her talk is titled Nothing But the Truth. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you, Bonnie. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
It's so nice to see you all. So last week when, at the end of Teresa's talk last week, when I was asked what my Dharma talk title would be, I very confidently just put it out there, nothing but the truth. And the second it came out of my mouth, I thought, no, what have I done? Now I've got to live up to that. And I thought I had a Dharma talk. I thought I had a talk that was based on this subject. And I had lots of clever things that I thought I wanted to put forward. And I spent all day yesterday writing the notes, or not even the notes, just writing a verbatim of this talk that I wanted to give today. And then last night, after I put my daughter to bed, I took the notes again and I looked through them and I thought, oh, no, like, no. But it was, you know, it was all very good and interesting, but just it wasn't in my heart. And I've heard Zen teachers say that when we give a Dharma talk, when we come forward to offer a Dharma talk, it's good to try and express what's in our hearts. And maybe that's a better truth than the one that I was going to rabbit on about tonight. So I come to you this evening just with a collection of thoughts and impressions that are currently with me. So I'd like to express them to you as the contents of my heart right now. The other day, on Saturday morning, I tuned into a Dharma talk from San Francisco Zen Center, and there was a person giving a Dharma talk there. I didn't know who they were. I'd never seen them before. And I didn't really catch much of the Dharma talk because I was busy doing some things. But when this person started talking, the first thing he said was, I haven't prepared anything for this Dharma talk. And then he said, not to have prepared something for a Dharma talk, to come here with no notes, is compassion. And I was like, what? How? And it's those things that don't make sense that stick with you, isn't it? Like, that's our Zen thing. We say lots of things that don't make sense and those things stick with us and somehow they seep in eventually. How a Dharma talk with no notes could be something compassionate. And I've been trying to think about that. Because for me, a compassionate thing to do before a Dharma talk is has previously been to spend a lot of time planning something, because I have great gratitude for, you know, the invitation, the opportunity to sit here, and great respect for your time, for the time of everybody who's here. I don't want to waste it. I want to make sure that whatever I have is worth your time. But then Teresa talked last week about resistance. I see Teresa's here, but I don't see her face. Teresa brought some vulnerability to us last week when she came to us and she said, I had resistance in putting this talk together. And I think there's a bravery to that when we reveal something that's in our hearts. And we don't try and build it over with something intellectual or something entertaining. So I think the willingness to show vulnerability and to bring it forward is a very strong element of compassion, and something that's in our practice. I'm going to read a poem. Put the poem up here so that you can all read along if you like. It's a poem by Philip Larkin, who's one of my favorite poets. And the reason I like Philip Larkin is because he's so unpretentious. He uses normal language. anyone could read Philip Larkin and understand what he's trying to say, or at least I think so. And I know a few of his poems, but I kind of tripped over this one yesterday while I was trying to make a clever talk for tonight. And this poem just got me. It just got me. So I'd really like to share it with you. I'm going to read it out. The mower. The mower stalled twice. Kneeling, I found a hedgehog jammed up against the blades, killed. It had been in the long grass. I had seen it before and even fed it once. Now I had mauled its unobtrusive world unmendably. Burial was no help. Next morning, I got up and it did not. The first day after a death, the new absence is always the same. We should be careful of each other. We should be kind while there is still time. There was so much in there for me when I read that yesterday, the sadness of having inadvertently killed this little hedgehog, the feeling of regret, the feeling of responsibility, that kind of almost the shame, the shame of being human and having so much power over this little tiny thing that you could just mow over it and end its life. And it made me think of a little bird that met its fate in a similar manner at my hands last year when I did a trip in an RV with my family, and we drove to Utah. And we had a lovely trip in this big RV, this big hulking machine that eats more gas than I ever imagined a machine could eat. And just power, big hulking thing, and wonderful. And it kept us alive for like a week, and we saw beautiful things, and we were able to stay outside in the desert and be very comfortable and have a toilet with us and cook food and, you know, just do all these remarkable things. And then we had a long drive back on the last day, and we got to the office where we had to give back the RV. And as I was driving in, I could just see everybody who was walking around the parking lot was kind of looking and pointing at the front of our RV. And what had happened was this little bird had just kind of got wedged in the grill. It just such this huge, huge machine, and it's got this big grill at the front, and this little bird had flown in. And it was so clean. When I came out to look at it, like, there was no blood. All you could see was just its little feathers, its little body, its little legs poking out. It looked very beautiful. So I took it out with, I actually had to go to a gas station. So at the gas station, I held it and I put it in a paper towel and I wrapped it. I couldn't bury it. I was at a gas station, you know, and I just put it in the bin at the gas station. I didn't know what else to do with it. And I thought, this is a cost. This feels like a cost. Never mind the money we've spent on the petrol or on renting this big vehicle. Never mind the pollution we probably put out there in the last week. And kindness, the poem talks about kindness. We should be kind to one another while we have time, while there's still time. And today I met on Zoom with a group about this big, group about this size of my friends, some friends from London, some friends from home. And about almost 2 years ago now, we lost one of our friends, one of our number, a school friend of mine who was the same age as me, just passed away one day. And he was one of the kindest people I've ever known. And I can say that with such certainty. And it was wonderful today to connect with everybody who knew him. And everybody's, whenever people tell stories about Spencer, Spencer's his name, it's just this epic of generosity and kind of acts of kindness every time. You know, as we were sitting on Zoom, we were toasting him, and somebody lifted up a cut glass, crystal champagne glass, you know, this beautiful item that he'd just left on there. He'd left two of them on their doorstep once with a bottle of champagne. He would just do things like that, you know, for no reason. Somebody else had a solid silver mug that he'd given them on their 21st birthday. And somebody else had like a bunch of toys that he got for their kids. He always called me on my birthday. And he would send us flowers. He sent my husband and I flowers on our wedding anniversary. He was extremely kind. And what we realize today in celebrating him and celebrating what would have been his birthday is that today is International Random Acts of Kindness Day. There's actually a day for it, and it's today. And today would have been Spencer's birthday. And he's the kindest person I knew, or one of the kindest people I've known. So that all just came together so beautifully. And then a different kind of sense of compassion came up for me this week. As I was driving into the strip mall here in Mountain View off Rengsdorf, the strip mall that's closest to Cannondoe, that houses the Starbucks that we all used to go to in mornings, after morning Zazen. I go there quite often. I go shopping in the Safeway there. And I noticed a couple of days ago, and maybe it's been there since the summer, I have no idea, but I only just noticed it for the first time a couple of days ago. There's a big sign at the entrance to the strip mall that says, "We're back," in really big letters, "We're back." And maybe that sign went up in the summer, or maybe it just went up recently. I have no idea, but it got me. This sign. Unexpected moments. Behind that sign, there was so much of the struggle of the last year. So much that people have lost and had to sacrifice. So much that people have been forced to change. And I just thought of these businesses in the strip mall. Probably not the first thing I think of when I think of the tragedy of the pandemic. I think of people falling sick and people dying. But then I thought, there's a Mexican restaurant here, and there's a noodle restaurant here, and there's a hair salon and a martial arts center and a coffee shop that used to employ a bunch of people who we saw every day and who were very warm to us, were very kind to us when we came in. And there's this optimism, isn't there? This, we'll be back. It'll go back to normal. Come shopping again. Come spend your money here. Maybe at some points in my life I've had stronger feelings about the capitalist endeavor and advertising and being constantly invited to spend my money in different places. But then I can turn it around and remember that there's a person behind that endeavor. You know, every time or a lot of the time, there's somebody that's hoping that something's going to get better. And a couple of weeks ago, I got a phone call from the VA hospital where I did a tiny bit of volunteering, maybe 2-3 months at the most, at the beginning of last year, until they shut down to volunteers for COVID. And they said, we're offering the volunteers from the hospital vaccines for COVID because we have too many. We've given all our staff the vaccines, and at the end of each day we have vaccines left over. And would you like one? And I said, yes, please. That's very generous. Thank you. And I had all sorts of mixed feelings about going to get this vaccine. I was the first person in my family to get it, and every single person in my family should get that vaccine before me, because everybody else has some kind of health issue or they're much older than me. It didn't feel right. But at the same time, it wouldn't have felt right to me to refuse it either. So I went, and it was incredible to walk into this like hospital setting. So many people there, so many people there to receive the vaccine, and so many people there just working towards the goal of distributing the vaccine. And I imagine many of them were volunteers themselves. And you had to line up in one place and fill out a form and take the form and line up somewhere else and join a third line. And then we were ushered into this little chapel, and a lady stood up and she read out to us what the side effects might be. And she gave us a form to fill out should we have side effects. And that reminded me of the experimental nature of this whole project. Little guinea pigs being ushered in, and we really don't know what's going to happen to you, but fill this out. And then when I sat down to actually receive the vaccine, I pulled up my sleeve and the man came, and just as he was putting the needle in my arm, I became overcome. And I teared up and I started to cry. Not sob, just I shed a tear, because it felt momentous to me in that moment. It felt overwhelming that this unifying global event is happening and is so devastating in so many ways and has been mishandled in so many ways and has caused so many meta problems on top of the problems, on top of the problems that it caused. And yet there's something in us that wants to resolve it. And there's something in us that wants to go on. There's something in us that wants to make people better. That wants to make sure we don't get sick. And that our parents don't get sick. And that our children don't get sick. And it felt like it had been turned around pretty damn quick. Or to me at least. I was like, is this happening? My husband just walked in through the door before, and I got a little bit distracted for a second. And I'm just seeing him the first time this evening. He's been away in Colorado with his father, and his father's very sick. And he's receiving hospice and palliative care right now. But what's great is that my husband got to go over there and spend some time with him. And what's been even more wonderful is hearing how the two of them spent time together this last week. And my husband, who has never been in the position of caring for somebody sick, had a very, very steep induction into that, and giving medicines and making sure that he eats and making sure that he drinks and making sure that he does everything just at the right time. And this was all new for him. And he really touched me by telling me what a beautiful and heart-opening experience caring for his father has been. how the connection that they've made in the last week is unlike any that they've had in the last 47 years. Care. Care and connection. And compassion. I think that when we open up to the possibility of caring, to understanding what even the smallest kindness can really mean. In the poem, half of what kills Philip Larkin about what happened is, I saw the hedgehog, I've even seen him, and I fed him. I fed him. I was kind to him, and I made that connection, which just makes it all the worse, all the more painful. This tragic, careless thing that happened. And it's touching to me that the line when he talks about the burial, I'll put the poem up again now, just before I finish, but he says, burial was no help. No, this ritual, when I wrapped the little bird in the paper towel and I put it in the bin. Because the next morning he got up and the hedgehog did not. So kindness. I'm going to put it up one more time. The mower. The mower stalled twice. Kneeling, I found a hedgehog jammed up against the blades, killed. It had been in the long grass. I had seen it before and even fed it once. Now I had mauled its unobtrusive world unmendably. Burial was no help. Next morning I got up and it did not. The first day after a death, the new absence is always the same. We should be careful of each other. We should be kind while there is still time. Thank you for your patience with me this evening. I would love to hear from anybody about any of the things that I've touched on, unexpected things maybe that have touched you or opened something up for you or sparked compassion in you, or maybe a random act of kindness that you received or offered somebody today on this International Day of Random Acts of Kindness. Thank you.
Dave?
Thank you for your talk, Vanessa. It certainly raised a lot of things in my mind that I'm sure in everyone else's. The poem I wasn't familiar with, but it's really quite beautiful. There's one line in it that reminds me of one of my very favorite poems by Dylan Thomas, Refusal to Mourn. Larkin says, "The first day after a death, the new absence is always the same." And the last line of Thomas's Refusal to Mourn is, "After the first death, there is no other." Mm. You know, it's like death is a reality for all of us. The death of one is the death of all. But the other thing I did want to mention, though, is that I said something recently remembering how Alan Liu came and gave a talk. You know, the Zen rabbi came and gave a talk at Canon Do many years ago. And I was reminded of that when you talked about the sign saying, "We're back." It was a wonderful thing that Alan Liu said about the difficulties of meditation. He said that there's a tremendous temptation to be frustrated and impatient with yourself when you're meditating and your mind wanders off into some random thought, and you suddenly become aware of the fact that you've done that, that for the last 10 seconds or the last minute or whatever, your mind has been somewhere else. And you sort of drag yourself kicking and screaming back to practice and saying, bad meditator, and slapping yourself on the wrist. And what Alan Liu said is, you shouldn't be saying, you know, "Oops, I did it again." You should be saying, "I'm back." And that really that experience of coming back from your mind wandering is one of the key parts of Zazen practice. I'm back.
Thank you, Dave. Diane? Thank you, Vanessa. Your talk was really from the heart, and the poem really touched me. And one of the words you said about unifying, that in a way, this whole pandemic has, I have to say, a gift for me in many ways, because I've connected with people on a whole different level and in a whole different way, including all of you. I mean, to be able to look at all of your faces all at the same time, it's a gift. And while the tragedy is horrible, the people have really suffered and lost. But I have the word gratitude, because as he says in the poem, he could get up the next morning and the hedgehog could not. So every time I hear of some horrible thing, like someone else dying, like two of my neighbors died, neither of them died of COVID, but it's close when it's right next door, just down the street. And every time I pass their house, I think about the fact that they just recently died. So I'm kind of wondering if anyone else has had a positive experience from this tragedy that we've all experienced together, because it is unifying, because we're all going through it at the same time, as you said, or if anyone has some gratitude as well. Thank you.
I could certainly talk about my own gratitude, but I'd love to hear from somebody else. I saw a little hand go up there.
Wei?
Wei.
A response?
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Hi, Wei.
Hi. Hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm still here. Well, first of all, thank you very much, Vanessa, for your talk and the poem. I want to speak a little bit about my experience with the poem. I think the author was able to relate to the hedgehog because that's a relationship. From the poem, it tells us that he fed the animal. And that actually applied to me because if something happened to someone who I know or someone who I have some interaction with, I will have different connection than someone I don't know. I mean, something, you know, let's say if my neighbor or my sister, my relative. So anything that I put the word my in front of whatever that is, my this, my that. So that's one thing I'm thinking. Let's say if something happened to someone who I haven't seen before, totally don't know about, that would be a different connection. So I think that's one point I want to share with you from based on my own experience. The second point I want to share with you is what Diane, she asked if anyone else have some good experience from this unified pandemic. To me, that's actually a very good experience for me because I actually was able to understand myself better. Something happened in my childhood actually affected the way I related to people and how I react. It's during this time, this pandemic, I have more free time and I was able to find the right avenue to figure things out. So I think that was a good thing. I don't know, I can only speak for myself. I mean, everyone else have different experience. So to me, I'm very thankful for the pandemic. It actually gave me an opportunity to learn about myself and of course other people too. This forum is a very good one. Even though I don't show up every week, I do occasionally show up and I do learn something from this, the Canando. Canando is a positive force in my life. And I want to thank you, Les, and all the speaker, Bonnie, everyone is helping me and share your experience. I think the experience, the sharing of experience is something that money cannot buy. It's priceless. Mm. It's priceless. With that, I want to pass it to you. Thank you, Vanessa. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Wei. Jennifer?
Thank you very much. I would say community has been the most positive thing out of the pandemic. Joint experiences, not necessarily all of ours are the same, but it helps us to give space to what we need to in our own lives and realize that we're not alone. In my case, I just recently moved and part of the move was saying goodbye to two animals that I'd cared for 4 or 5 years. And so it was a death for me. And I knew that it would be. But the fact I always comforted myself during the time I cared for them, knowing that when I did have to leave them with their owner, that I had treated each moment with kindness and given it my best. And so the poem was very meaningful to me to continue to allow space for myself as I process the transition and also to be comforted in knowing that I did do what I could for them while I could care for them. So thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Megan.
One thing with me is that I've gotten to know my cat better, which sounds very strange, but we spend more time together and she's much more affectionate. She'll come up and she'll kind of hang on my chest and it's kind of like we can read each other more than we could before, you know, like, I mean, she talks in cat, of course, but I kind of know what she wants. So that's been a small thing that I've appreciated.
Thank you.
Mike?
Yes, thank you so much for your talk, Vanessa, and thank you for your question, Diane. One thing the pandemic has made me feel is gratitude for my circumstance, that I have the material resources to survive this and make this more of a temporary circumstance and not sort of life-shattering like so many people have had their livelihood shattered by this. I feel very grateful that I have the resources both spiritually and financially to survive this pandemic. So I've become very grateful. It made me realize what I had instead of what I lack. It's been an eye-opening experience for me. I also had a question for you, Vanessa.
Mm-hmm.
I was really touched by your story of how your husband and his father made a new connection while your husband was taking care of his father when he was suffering. My question is, we usually, almost everybody looks at death as a very scary, negative thing, but I found that if you, in my personal experience contemplating it, it helps me sometimes, it helps me be more productive because I realize there's a time limit to how long I'm alive. So it makes me realize I have to do important things now because there's a time limit. I will eventually, like everyone else, die. And it's related to your experience with your husband and his father because that was something good that came from contemplating mortality. So I was wondering if there's a way to reframe death, or at least thinking about death, as something positive. It's very scary. It's the ultimate unknown. I mean, it's a transition to whatever comes next. It's an inevitable life transition. But is there a way to frame this as something that is positive or that good can come of this?
This being, this, you just mean this being the truth of life and death and dying?
Yes, of death. Is there a way to sort of look at it as something that is an inevitable transition that we all must undergo, that can breed positivity in a way, in a certain way? Is there any way to look at this in a positive light? Because it's incredibly saddening and scary to most people. Is there a way to sort of frame this in a positive way, death?
Thank you. That's a great question. Here's my two cents. I also had an experience of caregiving for somebody who was dying, my grandmother, many years ago. And prior to going into that experience with her, I was absolutely terrified at the prospect of
somebody that was so close to me and somebody that I loved so much, you know, suffering from a long illness with cancer, many months. And when it happened, my mother and I just moved in with her in her apartment and we cared for her and we learned how to care for her, a bit like my husband had to this week, you know. We had to learn how to provide palliative care for somebody. And in a very similar way, even at the time, I remember feeling that it was one of the warmest, most authentic experiences of my life, going through that with her. And since then, I've done a little. I don't have a great experience at all, but I've done a little bit of hospice volunteering too. And there's a similar, you know, for me, that the draw. Giuseppe, in fact, asked me last week, like, why are you doing hospice volunteering? Like, what's the draw there for you? But the draw is for me is the authenticity of the experience. When you're in a room when someone's dying, so much, everything extraneous falls away. Everything, you know, you're there and there's just what matters and nothing else in that moment. You can't be any other way. And the kinds of conversations, the kinds of the way that you enter into relation with great suffering or with dying, in that way, for me, is unlike any other connection or communication that I experience with people. And there's an openness. You know, I was talking at the beginning of the talk about vulnerability, you know, and how vulnerability is such a surefire way to connection and love. You know, when we can allow vulnerability to come forward, that's when the quality of connection that can happen, I think, at least, you know, in my experience, when I practice that, just is, it's a different thing. It's a different thing. And likewise, you know, in caring for somebody, you know, if we can, when we bring our vulnerability forward to somebody else who's vulnerable, you can meet. That's a place where you can meet, you know. So your common humanity, we all are, you know, afraid of pain and suffering and death and all these things, but we can meet at that point if we can just say to each other, like we are right now, this is terrifying, this is horrible. You know, this is where we're at. So what do we do? What can we do today? So I've never, to me at least, I personally try and step back from talking about framing and using, you know, positive and negative language in that way. You know, how I think there's all sorts of very worrying culture out there that's trying to sort of pep up death and make it positive in a way that it can, you know, like, I don't think that would be the kind of the goal. I wouldn't say that was the goal. I think connection, getting up close to something, you know, getting up close to something. Distance creates fear, in my experience. When we're afraid of something, we back off. And when we back off, we're afraid of it because you can't see it. Because your imagination will fill in that gap and your imagination will put every which way sort of fear and fearful image in there. And when you're in the room with something and you're up close to it and there's no more space between you, there's a lot less room for fear. And I think something else happens in that moment that that is authentic and true, and that it's not frightening or depressing. Yeah. It's joyful. Joyful. Yeah. Giuseppe.
Hello, Vanessa. Good morning.
Good afternoon. Evening, morning.
Thank you for your talk. I have a question, and that is short, and then I would like to say a couple of things around it. The question is, who killed the hedgehog? Who killed the bird? And I'd like to share a few thoughts. I really noticed when you mentioned, you told us the title of your talk last week. I really noticed it was, you know, nothing but the truth. It was, you know, taking the challenge of sincerity. And it is a lot of our practice is like that, or it's a device for people to take up the challenge. You know, if you go and see your teacher, if you even just go and sit Zazen, you are taking up the challenge. And so I really noticed that also, because I remembered exactly one time that I had that I decided kind of my talk would have been like, I'm gonna tell, you know, illusion from enlightenment. I had a hard time preparing that talk too that week, and the notes were no use in the end, you know, of course. So I really noticed that, and it's this device that helps us to see and to learn about ourselves more. This practice of sincerity, and I think when we catch ourselves, it's always an interesting moment. It's not for the feeling of guilt or anything, but for what we learn about who we are. I'll stop here, and I would like to hear your answer.
My answer to who killed the hedgehog?
Yes.
Well, Philip Larkin's lawnmower killed the hedgehog, but yes, obviously there's another angle from which he did not kill the hedgehog, and the hedgehog's demise was due to his position within the interrelated karmic space-time continuum of the moment where he found himself in the long grass and there happened to be a lawnmower there. I I was, when I was thinking about the bird, you know, I was thinking a lot about, or I have recently, like more and more, I find myself thinking in terms of kind of, what's the word? Like not like transaction or kind of, or sort of balance of like how energy is transferred from one event to another, you know? So, you know, in order for an RV to drive down the road, you know, it needs a certain amount of petrol. You know, it needs this kind of energy. It requires human energy. And then when you start going back, well, it required being designed, you know, it required parts being brought from all over the world. It required metal that was probably forged, you know, and the energy involved in that event of an RV roaring down a highway in Utah. And then on the other side, or part of that picture, there being a bird that flies, and flight, you know, flight, like the design of a bird and the energy of flight. And I think the way that energy, that kind of energy is always, it's weighed out, mitigated by the potential hazard. You know, when the faster you go, the more energy you use in the RV, you know, the worse a possible crash could be if it happened, right? And the same with the bird, this wonderful, this energetic event of flight that is happening, and the way that the bird's body and its senses have evolved to a certain purpose to be just right for the thing that it needs to do. But there's something in that bird's sensory makeup that just put it at a disadvantage at that moment when the RV was coming towards it, that it just didn't quite have the moment to sense what was going on and the speed to get out of the way in time. I don't know. I start to sink into an inevitability when I go down this road, but it's amazing to me. It's amazing to me how balance is and how naturally things just fall into balance. Yeah. Thank you, Giuseppe.
Oh, it wasn't a trick question. I think because it shows in your talk, I think how this feeling of a little bit of shame that or being caught of having done something that maybe you don't think it's right, and it's I think is you know it's inevitable we can hurt each other, but at the same time we can see ourselves that, you know, we also love each other, and so we see our relationship that way. And we see ourselves, and we maybe put less emphasis on ourselves, you know. So thank you for the talk. I enjoyed it.
Hi, Vanessa. Thank you for your talk. I really enjoyed the poem that you shared. And so many interesting ideas there. And also, as Michael was talking and about life being short and what to do, it made me think about yesterday I watched a documentary about John Lewis, American legislator and civil rights activist who passed away recently. And in the documentary, he said, we all, more or less, I mean, and just what the way I remember he said it, he said, we only come this way once. We should give it all we have. Mm. And, you know, coming from him, of course, he was such a courageous man. It was very inspiring to hear that. It made me think, yeah, definitely. Now I have to figure out what am I gonna give it all I have to. And when I was living in DC, I had a roommate for quite a few years. And, you know, he said, you know, right now somebody's waking up and taking a shower, having a coffee, without knowing that today is the last day of his or her life. And it's true. And I think it's important to have the idea of death present, not in a negative way, but in the way that the poem is inviting us to consider it, you know, thinking, well, we have limited time and we should be kind to each other. Mm. So, thank you.
Thank you.
And I have a question.
Thank you, that's lovely. It makes me think, gosh, how many times we need to be told this, you know? We know it with our brains. At least I don't think most of us probably don't believe that we're going to come back countless times, you know? I think in whichever way we perceive it, you know, this is it. And yet it has to be constantly told to us again and again. I appreciate our tradition specifically for doing that. And I have gratitude that we do that.
Right. Thank you for your talk tonight, Vanessa.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canandoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.